What's up, everybody? Welcome to the podcast. That's what we're calling it right now. It's the podcast. Actually, it's the post-game podcast. Not, unfortunately, certified fresh from the press box. We had some stuff going on last night that we had to get out of there. Ryan had softball. I had to meet some family. Guys, I got home about 3 in the morning. Got up shortly before this podcast began. So if we're out there in the woods somewhere, y'all come get us in the podcast land. That's Randall. That's Ryan. You know them by now. And we are cooking up a post-game podcast from last night's. Was it last night? No. It was yesterday's spring game, red-white game. Guys, we're back. We've taken a hiatus. We're back right now. Don't know how long the back part is going to last, but give us a quick summary of your last, since our last podcast, episode 239, this is 240. Quick summary of your life.
Well, I got in a car accident on the way to practice, totaled my car. I did get a new car, so we're all good. Been able to make it to practice safely ever since then. That's about the biggest thing that's happened in my life since we last podcasted.
We're super glad that you're okay and the people that were in front of you.
Yes.
Mine's much more simple. It's just been softball. That's it. That's all I do. It's softball. That's nothing's better. Gone on with that team too, either way, huh?
Nothing has happened on the softball beat, luckily for us, right? You're rocking that beat as you always do. Let's talk some football, fellas. By the way, nothing's happened in my life, so don't worry about it. Let's talk some football. Yesterday was the spring game, as we said, on the field after the game, which, by the way, is up on my YouTube channel if you want to watch that video. It's John Hoover Media on YouTube. Get over there and watch that thing because it's and get Randall's highlights and the post-game interviews and all that as well. We got them all. We got all like 12 videos up or 10 videos or something like that. So check that out, John Hoover Media. As we said last night on the field, by the time we got to it, it was last night. It was like 6 o'clock. 65-58, whatever that means nothing. Means the offense beat the defense. Imagine that. Hey, this is different for the offense. Jeff Levy's offense couldn't beat Brent Venables and Ted Roof's defense last year. Remember that ball into the end zone? I think it was Jackson Arnold threw the ball. Was it Jackson? Can't remember. But the ball, the pass hit Jaden Gibson, popped up in the air. Caused an interception. Defense wins the game on the last play of the game. This time, Seth Luttrell, offensive coordinator, wins the game on the last play of the game. So that's something, isn't it? Is that stupid? That's stupid, but it's something.
Hey, the offense, the big offseason acquisition, they played a whole 12 games last year in the regular season plus a bowl game to realize they need Deion Burks to beat this defense. And that was the big takeaway.
Yeah.
And Chapman McCown, game-winning touchdown, RB1.
That's right. No, probably not. But it was an interesting day yesterday at the ballpark because, like Ryan said, Deion Burks, 5 catches, 174 yards, 64-yard touchdown, 50-yard touchdown, best player on the field when he wasn't anywhere near Michael Boganowski. How about that? Is that fair? Michael Boganowski led the defense with, I think, 6 tackles. He led the entire Cleveland County with violent hits yesterday, at least 2.
He led in perspective targeting calls as well. Apologies to Bauer Sharp, I suppose. As you know, it's bad when even the person that lays the hit, Boganowski, like instantly runs over. It's like, are you good? My fault. This is, you're also wearing an OU helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Penalty flag came down too. So, but it was wiped out by a holding or something.
I think that
I
think a lot of OU fans will like to see that that mentality from Michael Boganowski when the guys on the other side of the field are not also in OU helmets. You know, it's really nice to have a big-bodied freshman in the defensive backfield who's not afraid to come down and lay a few hits. He maybe a little overzealous at times. You know, he hit Caleb Hicks, I think, late as well. Josh Bates got in his face, but I think that, you know, I think most football coaches would tell you they love to have a guy that you have to rein it in a little bit more than rather than a guy you have to tell to go out there and be aggressive. And so that kind of goes along with the highlights that OU has posted from him in spring practice. Yep. You know, Michael Boganowski, and when he wasn't, you know, trying to knock the heads off of his teammates. He really did have a pretty good day making some tackles. He seemed like he's going to be pretty good in that department, you know, coming downhill, making tackles and run game, pass coverage, things like that.
Yeah, Sooners were without some starters, obviously, in the defensive backfield, which allowed them to put the freshman, true freshman in there. But all right, so yesterday, Jackson Arnold, kind of not really his debut, but his debut as the in the spring game as the starter, 10 of 20, 220 yards, cut the two touchdowns to the two perfect deep balls to Burks. What'd y'all think of his performance?
I thought it was pretty good. The most important thing is it sounds like last time we saw him, he was an interception machine. That appears to have not like lessened through spring practice from what we're hearing. So the biggest thing for me, weirdly, for Jack Starr was going to be don't throw an interception. Don't get caught by a safety rotating. We saw that that sideline interception against Arizona, that kind of thing. So you didn't have any of those. I think Oklahoma fans would have rather seen that completion percentage be above 50%, but a couple of those were scuttled throwaways. There was a little like swing pass to Burks that because the defender was coming on about to hit him, he shuffled it to his feet, and him and Burks basically immediately after were like, Deion was like, thank you for not getting me killed. Jackson's like, no sweat. But really, I thought he missed the one deep shot to Burks. And then there was one possession where he had two balls that were kind of high. Other than that, if you're not putting it in harm's way and you have two of those deep balls hit in stride, giving Burks a chance to just run under it and run away from the Oklahoma defense, I thought it was good, especially because while the protection was better than I think we thought it was going to be, there were still moments where Arnold was having to move around behind the line of scrimmage. So all things considered, no turnovers. I think that's a good day in the office for Jackson.
Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, but I in my brain, which cooks up all kinds of weird stuff, I'm recalling three or four drops. Were those for Arnold or were those for all quarterbacks?
I think that there was definitely a Gibson drop. There was the one possession where he went a little too high on the ball to Bauer Sharp. That's the one that Michael Boganowski tried to eliminate Bauer Sharp from the program. The next one was just flat out a Gibson drop. And then the very next play, I thought it was a little bit of drop, a little bit of the ball too high. If you want to chop blame on that one. But other than that, I didn't think that Arnold had a ton of drops. I thought that Michael Hawkins actually got hit with a couple of drops there when he was run with the twos.
Okay.
And you know, you talked about the one that he overthrew a little bit to Deion Burks. And we kind of touched on it last night when it was just the three of us talking. You know, last year with Dylan Gabriel, we would always be sitting in the postgame podcast saying, well, he played fine. He played well. He had 300 yards, but he could have had 400 if he'd, you know, hit his receivers in stride. If he wasn't underthrowing Brennan Thompson, if he wasn't underthrowing Andrel Anthony. I think we saw yesterday that that's not going to be a problem with Jackson Arnold. These fast receivers, you know, the Brennan Thompsons, the Deion Burks, the Andrel Anthonys, Nick Anderson, Jaden Gibson, he's not going to underthrow these guys. He's going to be able to put it on the money, and maybe he'll overthrow it sometimes, but he's not going to underthrow the ball. These guys are not going to have to stop and come back to the ball like we did see last year at times with Dylan Gabriel.
The receivers were like the safeties and defensive backfield. Woody Washington was out, cornerback, safety, whatever you want to call it, nickel these days. Who knows what he's going to play. But the receivers were similar in that they were missing some of their best playmakers, guys that were out, Nick Anderson, Brennan Thompson, Andrel Anthony out. And a lot of these were, we don't want to risk it. You know, a lot of these injuries, guys being held out, were more along the lines of, we don't need to see what you can do. Take the day off. We appreciate your service kind of thing. But the receivers that played yesterday, I thought were, in addition to obviously Burks, the supporting cast, I thought was very dynamic.
Yeah, you're seeing that Emmett Jones has taken no time to rebuild this wide receiver room. We saw a bit of Ivan Kerryon, which we were joking about last night. His size plus being 24 means he's impossible to miss because you're doing like a double and triple take when he goes out there. No. But I think Ivan Kerryon's going to have a nice run. Maybe not this year just because there's so many guys when they're healthy in front of him. But you're going to see a bunch of Jaquez Pettaway. He kind of got to play the role of Deion Burks with that second unit that rolled out there with Michael Hawkins. And you saw a lot of good stuff from him. Zion Kearney, he's one that had a drop for Hawkins, kind of on a deep cross over the middle. But Zion Kearney is a guy that they're really excited about. Like that's something that Emmett Jones has quickly not, we talked about, it's not just the quantity of guys either brought in the portal or signed, but you look at, it feels like he's got a little bit of the Midas touch right now. Angel Anthony, their transfer last year, big time until he had the injury. He's still rehabbing that. You talk about the development of Anderson. You talk about Drake Stoops taking another level. Well, now this year it's Deion Burks, Midas touch again in the portals, what that thing looks like. And then you're going to see continued development from, you would imagine, Anderson once he's clear to get back in there. Gibson, Petaway, that's a room that's humming if they can just protect Arnold so he has time to spray the ball out to those guys.
And Randall, I want to ask Randall about the tight end position. We were harsh on grading the tight ends last year. We've been hard on them because they didn't really do much. The tight ends in this game, nothing. We had one that was out. Obviously, Jake Roberts is out. Another one, Bauer Sharp, was running around, getting knocked around a little bit by Boganowski and others. But Devon Mitchell caught one pass for minus 3 yards. The tight end production yesterday, any reason to be concerned? Is this just a one-off? Jackson Arnold actually talked about it and said he believes in those guys. He loves playing with those guys. But what are your thoughts on how the tight ends performed in the passing game?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Jackson Arnold was asked about it in the post game, and he kind of said, well, I think that's just the way the game went. And I think we can chalk a little bit of that up to, you know, Seth Luttrell not really wanting to show his cards too much in the spring game. You know, we know that, you know, offense is going to be bland. They're not going to run a lot of creative plays. You know, they're not going to run a lot of their main stuff that they're going to run during the season. It's going to be very basic. And I think that, you know, with what the tight end room was last year, you know, a lot of teams that OU is going to play this year aren't necessarily going to know what OU is going to put in front of them when Jake Roberts, when Devon Mitchell, when Bauer Sharp are all in the lineup. And so if you can kind of play your cards close to the vest, keep that, not necessarily a secret, but just kind of, you know, keep other teams on their toes, keep them guessing, especially because you think about those three guys kind of offer, you know, different skill sets really with what they can do. And so you kind of keep your options open and kind of keep those guys, keep just not putting the plays out there that you're going to really use those guys. I think that's a lot of it. And, you know, again, you mentioned the one time they looked to Bauer Sharp, Boganowski blew him up. And so, you know, there's nothing you can really do about that. We mentioned Devon Mitchell. He was in with the later groups. And so it's kind of really hard to take stock in what that looks like. There's not a lot of great blocking on the perimeter there for when they're throwing in these, you know, passes behind the line of scrimmage. And then, like you said, Jake Roberts is hurt. There's some other guys, Caden Helms, Cade McIntyre, that maybe factor into that room. But I think the main three guys, it was more of just, like Jackson Arnold said, the way the game went and Seth Luttrell wanting to play his cards close to the vest, not give too much away in the spring game.
Yeah. Let's switch to running backs, Ryan. I thought the running backs were good. Obviously, they're getting ready to get better when you bring in a talent like Taylor Tatum and get everybody healthy. I didn't get a good vibe from Javonte Barnes being fully dressed out and not getting in the game. And then Brent Venables' answer kind of nebulous about the explanation for what happened there. But the guys who did play, the guys who got on the field, looked like they were there's some youth there. There's some explosivity. I guess I love that word. It's a fake word. There's some dynamic playmakers. And you see Caleb Hicks, for instance, putting his foot in the ground, changing directions, and nobody can keep up with him, scores a touchdown. I like the way Oklahoma's running backs looked yesterday.
Yeah, and just real quick, if you guys happen to miss it, Venables was asked about Barnes after the game, and basically he said, wanted to give those opportunities to guys who are more unsure of their role. It could be read that they know what Javonte Barnes is, don't need to roll him out of the spring game. If you want to be negative, you can read it other ways with the portal window opening, stuff like that. But that was the explanation Venables gave. Sawchuk, understandably, your RB1, not going to play many drives. He had a couple of nice plays, one out of the backfield. And then you were on to, Caleb Hicks and Samuel Franklin, the UT Martin transfer. And I thought those guys looked really good. Typically, the leading rusher in a spring game is usually like walk-on, someone that's not going to be a true factor. So I think hazard and trying to read too much into it. But I think the conversation we were having, this is no disrespect to anyone, but like Todd Hudson, Jaden Knowles, when those guys had their spring game, those were true out-and-out walk-ons that did not factor into the season with Gray and Brooks. You look at this, Caleb Hicks is a guy that looks a lot different than that type of guy. He's a guy that looks like he could be productive. You saw that it was at a 4th-and-1 or a 4th-and-2 where basically he has one nice little decisive cut through the hole. One, someone misfits the run and he's gone. He also had some stuff in the open field. Franklin was a burner at UT Martin. I think you saw a little bit of that, that once he got into the open field, he's able to use that speed. And it's just a different level of burst that I'm not sure anyone in that running back room other than Sawchuk had a year ago. And you know, with his hamstring stuff, it took him halfway through the season before you kind of got a home run threat out of the running back room for Oklahoma.
Yeah. Randall, I want to switch to the elephant in the room, or the five elephants in the room. It's the offensive line. And I say that with all due respect, they know who they are and they embrace it. They embrace the heck out of it. But in my game story yesterday, I was probably a little too hard on the fact that Oklahoma doesn't have any superstars on the offensive line. They don't have any returning starters. They don't have any all-conference probably candidates, certainly in the SEC. But I thought the first five, upon, you know, review and looking back on it, checking it out, looking at the numbers, thinking about some plays, I thought the offensive line held up. Obviously talking to Jackson Arnold, he was very proud of the offensive line, he said. The first five were good, mostly. The second five was consisting of, I think, six or seven guys, three true freshmen, two redshirt freshmen who didn't play much at all last year, so they redshirted. And then a transfer to kind of filled in here and there. And that's why Michael Hawkins' numbers efficiency and effectiveness, got my two words combined. Why he kind of dropped off after that first drive, because the offensive line protection in the second group was just really rough. But the first group, looking at it again, I thought they did really well.
Yeah, and I think that that's a surprise to a lot of people. I mean, you know, that was kind of what everyone talked about all offseason. You know, this offensive line, they need to improve. They need to get guys out of the portal. Like you mentioned, a lot of unproven guys, whether it's transfers or people who didn't start. You know, the one guy that's returning on this offensive line who did get a few starts last year in Sexton is playing guard now, not tackle. Yeah. But he actually looked pretty good yesterday. And I think, like you said, that first offensive line group did look really good. You know, I asked Jackson Arnold about it in the postgame interview, and he said, yeah, those guys played really well. He said on that first touchdown throw to Deion Burks, he was just sitting back there. He said it felt like forever that they gave him all day. And so I think that, you know, obviously, if you're an OU fan, you probably are still hoping that, you know, the Sooners can grab maybe a center or some other guys in the portal just to add to that depth, or maybe even, you know, throw someone in there who can compete for a starting spot. But I also think that if you're an OU fan, you have to be happy with what you saw yesterday, because that was a question mark definitely going into that game. Now, you mentioned the second group. Michael Hawkins was running for his life the entire time that he was in there. There was defensive linemen in his face the entire time. It felt like he never really got a clean pocket when he was in there. And I think Brent Venables kind of agreed. He even hopped into the postgame press conference defending Michael Hawkins, saying, well, if you saw him all spring, he was really, really good for us. And so I think even Brent Venables knows that you know, that second group needs work. And I think that's where a lot of the concern comes, because, you know, especially in the SEC, it's a big physical league, especially in the trenches. You know, you right now, OU cannot handle an injury on the offensive line, because if someone in that first group goes out, it's going to be rough if you don't add anyone else in the portal, because that second group looked really rough. I mean, the defensive line group that they went against, I'm sure we'll get more into that in a second. But those guys kind of ate against them. You know, that's when you saw the defense kind of really start to catch up to the offense, and that weird scoring system is when, you know, those interior defensive linemen, some of the edge rushers started to beat those guys, get into the backfield, tag Michael Hawkins for some of those sacks and things like that. So that second group need, like you said, it's a lot of young guys. It's a lot of guys who are unproven, a transfer from Michigan State in there. And so that's probably where you need to hit the portal, add some depth, because right now you really can't sustain an injury if you're OU. Yeah. Josh Isoso was snapping the ball. He's a true freshman. I think he played tackle in high school. So obviously there's going to be some hiccups there. The first snap, he almost threw over Michael Hawkins' head. But again, that first group, I think, was pleasantly surprising. The second group was more what we expected out of OU's offensive line.
Yeah, and so Troy Everett was out. Obviously, he's going to be out until August, probably, is what Brent told us during the spring. And then Garen Hatchett as well, missing, probably in that mix for number one, if not number two reps. Taylor was the right tackle yesterday, right? Starting?
Yeah, yep. Jake Taylor.
Yeah, Jake Taylor. So right, left to right, you got Tarquin, Sexton, Bates, Fabechi Nwewu, and Jake Taylor. That's your starting five as of yesterday. And guys, I think they may have identified their starting five. I'm a little surprised that Spencer Brown, the transfer from Michigan State, wasn't in the starting mix. He was in with the twos regularly, and at one point he was in at the end of the game on the final play with the, whatever you want to call it, threes and fours, I don't know. He was the one, Randall got video of it, of him picking up Chapman McCown off the ground after the game-winning touchdown. So he loved it. I wonder what the winning team got. Do you guys know? Was there a prize at stake, like steaks versus hot dogs kind of thing?
I don't know. There wasn't a lot of talk of that because I think it was just, you know, so disjoint with the offense-defense thing. I think that the offense just knew that they were going to get to make fun of Brent Venables. I think that's what they were, like, happy with.
It's also weird. They had the kids that were coming out doing, like, the halftime kicks for chicken or whatever, that added points to the game. And then they had coaches punting, and that added points to the game. It was a weird scoring system.
So weird. So many weird moments. And to be fair, Brent, if the offensive guys want to make fun of Brent, he explained in the post-game press conference. I got the quote right here. I had one blitz, couple of coverages, and that was it. Kept things vanilla. Guy, I thought that was awesome. I asked him a question about Zach Alley, and he's like, we didn't have our full defense out there still, so don't worry about it. So if guys want to make fun of Brent, Brent can say, listen, let's get back out there, and I'll show you everything in my playbook and see if you can handle it.
Yeah, let me ask you, before we like move on to the defense, was the one offensive line actually good yesterday, or because we had such low expectations, did they just like get over those expectations? Because they were playing against the second defensive line.
Yeah.
Oklahoma does not have the depth that they want on the interior. They're probably going to try to add two defensive tackles, and DeJon Terry didn't play yesterday. So that means that they're missing their most experienced guy, and Jack Sarnold was still having to move the pocket. He still wasn't able to be super accurate. Like, this is not an Oklahoma offensive line. Even if that's the group that rolls through, they're going to have big, big issues in the SEC with that group. They just weren't totally awful yesterday, I think.
No, I get you, Ryan. That's totally fair, what's your assessment there, because if you think about it, two of the long touchdown, the two long touchdown plays came against the two defense. And not only was it the two defense, it was the two defense missing a bunch of guys who were in the ones, right? Who were out with injury or being held out in the defensive backfield. Deion Burks was running. It reminded me of that Texas video yesterday where somebody tweeted out Arch Manning is the future of Texas, and he's throwing a touchdown bomb to a receiver, and there's not even a DB in the picture. That wasn't necessarily the case. Kenai Walker, for instance, was the DB on the first touchdown, and Kenai Walker is one of the frontline guys for Oklahoma. He should have had probably a better leverage on the cut, on the, you know, the route, whatever you want to say. He should have had better coverage overall. But there were some times where the guys that the one offense was going against were not anywhere close to the one defense. So, yeah, they were exposed. They were taking advantage of the guys that they were going against. Simple as that. I agree.
Yeah, but you still got to beat those guys. It would have been an awful sign if there was, like, no production for the offense against the two defense.
But I do think you bring up a good point for sure, Ryan.
Yes, agreed. Okay, so Brent Vanilla. Brent Venables kept the defense vanilla. I'm going to start calling him Brent Vanilla if that's going to be his thing.
Give me green beans, Brent Vanilla.
Yes. So anyway, Brent said, you know, we kept it vanilla. So let's get away from the game plan. Let's get away from, you know, Zach Alley and his – he seems to have a better grasp of what a 20-year-old young man wants out of life and wants out of football than Ted Roof did. Not saying Ted Roof was ancient, but he was heading in that direction, I guess. I'm joking. Guys love Ted Roof. They said so. But the way they talked about Zach Alley yesterday illustrated a different level of appreciation for their defensive coordinator. Did I read that wrong? What do you guys think?
I don't think so, because I think that goes along with what we've heard from the defensive guys all spring when we've talked to them. You know, whether that was at the spring media day back in early March or the spring practices that we've gotten to, you know, talk to guys afterwards this entire, you know, the past few weeks, I think that really echoes what they've said, is that, you know, they really resonate with Zach Alley. He's got a really good way of, you know, conveying the information to them. And I think that, you know, you guys pointed out yesterday, Zach Alley being a linebacker's guy and being a Brent Venables guy who's coached under him before, it allows Brent Venables, and Ryan and I have seen it at spring practice, it allows him to walk around. You know, he can go look at the defensive line. He can go look at the quarterbacks. He can go, he doesn't have to stick with the linebackers the entire time. He can be the head coach, kind of, you know, be the facilitator of the entire team, and he can trust Zach Alley, let him deal with the linebackers. And it seems like, you know, the defense as a whole really likes him. Again, that's what we heard from these guys all spring, is that they love the way he talks football. They can really resonate. They really understand what he's trying to, you know, put in front of them.
Yeah, the two things that stood out to me yesterday, like Ethan Downs, one was like more energy, but that makes sense, right? A younger guy than Ted Roof probably going to bring more energy. It's like, it's not like a knock. It's just Zach Alley has more energy. That's the thing. And I think that, you know, I don't know if it's because he's younger and so he has a better way of conveying the information, or if it's the fact that he worked under Brent Venables for so long at Clemson that he's just learning some wrinkles, some terminology stuff. But the bigger concepts of what Brent Venables wants, he knows those a lot deeper than what Ted Roof knew, who had only been with him for a year as an analyst. So being able to convey that and teach that to the guys, I mean, Danny Stutzman, Ethan Downs, all those guys have said that, like, they're able to take big ideas, digest them down to small thoughts, learn them quickly, and get rolling. And it feels like, I think Danny Stutzman said a couple weeks ago that they'll be able to bring in, like, more plays week to week, stuff like that, because of just the way that Zach Alley is able to quickly teach things to the defense.
And when we talked to Danny Stutzman and Jack Snarnold, I think it was on Wednesday, Danny Stutzman said, he said, everyone's getting it really, really well. They can roll out, you know, the freshmen, the young guys, and everyone's kind of understanding the defensive line, the linebackers, all those front seven guys. Everyone's understanding what he's saying.
Yeah, I think it's probably way too early to say, hey, how'd David Stone do? You know, it's probably way too early, but I thought in the few snaps that I watched of him specifically, I thought David Stone did really great. I thought Jaden Jackson did really great. We're talking about Oklahoma needing to kind of reinvent the culture of the defensive line and have some just killers up there. Again, true freshmen, should be in high school right now. But I thought those guys in their moments that they flashed in the first half, for sure, very impressive. The future looks bright. I'm not going to say that they went out there and, you know, murdered anybody or dominated anybody, but you take a guy that should be in high school and you roll him out against 22-year-old offensive lineman, 21-year-old offensive lineman, and say, go get him. I thought those guys were good, the two freshmen.
Yeah, Stone was affecting plays against the one offensive line, but I think the biggest nugget from yesterday is that Brent Venables said that both Stone and Jackson are both over 300 right now. Yeah. And that'll continue to go throughout the spring or summer.
Yeah. And you know, who you asked me on our signing day podcast, you said, who's the underrated guy in this class? And even back then I said, I think Jaden Jackson's going to surprise a lot of people. He was working with the ones yesterday. And like you mentioned, you know, he might not have had the same stats that a guy like Grayson Halton had, who I think had two tackles for loss, a sack in there. Grayson Halton looked really good too. But the thing with Jaden Jackson was he was pushing the offensive line back. He was in the backfield a lot, and he Michael Hawkins was running away from him a lot. In the way, he wasn't necessarily getting his hands on him, but he was pushing him, making him scramble out of the pocket, things like that. I thought Jaden Jackson, you know, did really good. You mentioned David Stone. He had more of the stats. I think he had at least one tackle for loss. He had another one around the line of scrimmage. I thought, like you mentioned, those guys looked really good. And Ryan, like you said, being over 300 pounds, that's huge, because in the SEC, you're going against big offensive linemen. I think before the spring game, you had one guy on the roster listed above 300 pounds, which was DeJon Terry. And so if those guys are now upping that weight too, that's going to be really, really important, you know, for the interior of that defensive line. And again, like you mentioned, it seems like there's a few transfer portal visitors there yesterday. They're probably going to try to add some of those guys, which that would just increase that depth there. And that's big for OU.
Yeah, I think everybody saw what they saw from the product on the field yesterday. So we don't need to necessarily go into that. You mentioned DeJon Terry. He didn't even play. He was up, you know, taking the day off. He's going to change the way this defensive line looks from yesterday. The defensive ends, I thought, played pretty good. PJ Adebore looks like he's gotten bigger, stronger, more explosive, if that's possible. R. Mason Thomas was fine. Ethan Downs had a couple of moments where he looked like the seniors, you know, the senior candidate, the senior statesman on the defensive ends. The linebackers, I think they were fine. Defensive backs, we talked about them missing a bunch of dudes, missing some starters. So hard to judge those guys, although I thought the young guys played well. Randall, we would be remiss if we didn't finish this thing off with recruiting. Over 100 players, we were told. I was told yesterday, my man Brandon Drum came out at some point and said we were on our way to the interview room. He said 82 confirmed. And when you get 82 confirmed, you can bet that there's another 20 that are, you know, just kind of showing up or didn't announce or whatever it is. So a massive, massive day for recruiting. Are you getting any sense this morning how that went for Venables? I tried to get that question in. I tried to ask him, hey, man, weather cooperated, fans cooperated, everybody showed up, 100 recruits. I tried to get that question in, but the press conference, the post-game press conference ran a little, was cut off a little bit. So what are your readings this morning on how that day shaped up for Oklahoma recruiting wise?
I think it went really well. Not only did OU get some really coveted guys on campus that they've been wanting to bring to campus, you know, guys from California, guys from Florida, guys from Utah, a few offers went out to guys that were there. And I think that after the success of yesterday, I think that it would not be surprising to see more than one commit coming in the near future for OU. I think that the recruits had a really good day there. The OU, I think, had like 10 commits, a few in the 24 class, a few in the 25 class. And so, you know, these recruits getting to be around those guys who are already committed to OU, that's big for them. And I think that it resonated really well. Again, I would keep an eye on the Twitter timeline, whatever it is, however you follow that, because I would assume that there's going to be commits in the near future. I don't know exactly when, but I would think that that's not coming too far down the pipe.
Ryan is back to softball today. He's leaving this podcast here in a couple of minutes, and he's going straight to the field, so do not miss his coverage. I'm going to give you guys this website. It's no longer All Sooners. Our brand is no longer All Sooners. You all know what happened. There was a little tiff. There was a little match, if you will, between a couple of companies. We're back with Sports Illustrated, okay? We have rejoined, and we are back with Sports Illustrated. We're full speed. But the website is different, kind of. It's like I said, there's stuff going on at the corporate levels, but we're no longer All Sooners. We don't have a new brand yet. We're working on it. Corporate is working on it. We're moving in that direction. So in the interim, if you're listening to this podcast and you want to jump on and see what we're talking about on our website, si.com/college/Oklahoma. That will take you to all of our work every day, si.com/college/Oklahoma. At some point, we're going to be Sooners SI or SI Sooners or something like that. We don't know yet what it is, but corporate is working on it. So hang with us a little bit longer. We'll get all that stuff figured out. Meanwhile, catch all these videos that I was talking about on my YouTube channel, John Hoover Media. All the visuals are going up there, including all the softball. The softball numbers are blowing up on John Hoover Media because these guys are cranking them out. Ryan sends that stuff out immediately. Interviews, player interviews, you know, all kinds of cool stuff is at that YouTube channel. So don't miss that, and don't miss si.com/college/Oklahoma. That's where you can find us for now. We'll have a cooler, smoother, easier accessible website name for you, URL, domain, all that good stuff coming very, very soon. Want to thank you guys for listening. Thank these guys for jumping on morning after the red-white game is always a challenge physically and emotionally and mentally and intellectually. So thanks, fellas, for jumping on. And I want to thank you all for listening. Of course, we'll be back after our next hiatus. I can't tell you when that is, but we'll be back on the podcast. I want to say SI Sooners so bad, but I'm not allowed to yet.
It's the podcast for now.
The podcast, the OU podcast. How about that? We'll just call it the SI Sooners podcast, but I'm not allowed to, so we'll just move on the podcast. Anyway, whenever we get that one posted, you can find that one and all of our shows wherever you listen to your podcast. Any platform, we're there. If you have an Amazon-enabled device, just say, Alexa, play the All Sooners podcast. Or I think Alexa will still do that All Sooners podcast. But you could also say SI Sooners. Saying. Anyway, it's also posted usually at our website, which is what? si.com/college/Oklahoma.
Nailed it. Bingo.
Just click on the player, listen on your phone, your tablet, or your computer, and all of our shows are posted again on my YouTube channel, John Hoover Media. I want to thank Ryan. I want to thank Randall. And I want to thank y'all. I'm John Hoover. I'll see you guys.